Everyone, welcome back to Dad Space, you know, podcast for dads by dads. And I have a dad who is definitely has a full house. Very, very, very full house. Joseph is here on the podcast. Joseph has several children, which we'll talk about, which I'm excited. Joseph has a really great backstory. He's served his country for many, many years as well. And thank you for doing that, Joseph. But so glad to have him on. He's a podcaster as well. So when we're done here, go right over to the Emotional Man Weekly Podcast. Check out his show. It's amazing. So, Joseph, welcome.
Thanks so much.
The podcast.
Thank you so much, David. I love what you're doing here. And I tell you what, we dads need as many other dads sharing our experiences as possible, especially just with kind of the pandemic of fatherlessness. And just kind of the wandering that men have, kind of this desolation of what manhood is these days. What does it mean to be a father? What does it mean to be a man? I think this is a critical role for your podcast. I'm really excited and appreciative of what you're doing here.
And likewise, your podcast is amazing as well. I love the guests you've had on your show. Some pretty amazing stories of people that have gone through some pretty, very interesting things have happened to them in their journey, right? And I love being a podcast host because you get to have time with these people and learn from them. So from your podcast, any of those episodes, any of those guests kind of stand out in your memory here in the moment where maybe a new listener to your show should go check out that particular episode?
You know, one of the early podcasts that we ran, I think it was episode 3. The gentleman I was interviewing, he was an immigrant to Canada, actually, and he's up there in Calgary. He does cabinet wrapping.
Oh, yeah.
But he was a political refugee. He witnessed his parents being executed right in front of him, and just the trials, the journey he's been on. I definitely recommend people going checking that out. Talk about emotional resiliency and just how hard he's working for his family. And there's a lot of men out there that will work very hard, but the lure of, you know, building financial wealth, of getting recognition at work, those can become motivations of their own. But what I'm always really impressed by, especially by very successful entrepreneurs, are the men who work for their families. The purpose, the reason why they're working is centered around their family. It really helps them balance and anchor their lives so they don't burn out. But I think I'd have to double check. Maybe later on this episode, once I've had a chance to look at the specific episode, I highly recommend checking that one out. He was really motivational to me.
Yeah, so I'm looking at it as we have the screen. I think it was Michael.
Yeah.
Was his name? Okay, and then I saw you have a person I had on my show, Ron Newsbaum. Newsbaum was on.
Oh, yeah.
As well. He's been on my show.
Jarhead Marine that now is in the construction industry.
Yeah.
You know, talk about leading a really cool, his business. It's a software company now that connects all these different construction companies with their customers so that they can talk to the right person at the right time. It's really cool. And just what he does, actually, I think he follows the 75 hard, 25 easy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he's there working at the house with the sun running up above him. He's he has some funny stories as well.
He's a great guy. Yeah. And he as well has served his country, and, what a great guy, what a humble person. And again, a great story, and his love for his son just blow you away. Right. Make you just want to go hug your kids after hearing that guy talk. I have 3 kids, and I thought that was a busy house. You've blown right past me. Tell everybody how many kids you have under one roof. Come on.
Yeah, so we have 9 children. 3 are biological, 4 are four are adopted, 2 are foster, and we are actually, our paperwork for adopting those two was just approved.
Come on.
So we'll be having two more adoptions here in the next month or so. So we're very excited.
Oh my gosh. Wow. What a mix, right? So, okay. So what is the age range too for everybody?
Yeah. So my oldest is 11 and my youngest is one.
Wow.
And we both come from large families. My wife and I'm seventh of nine. My wife is the oldest of seven. But early on in our marriage, we found out that she had a lot of issues with bearing children, to say the least. And that kind of started this whole journey of adoption. But then our first adoption was twins. And then we had a surprise pregnancy. And after that, we moved to Arizona. And I don't know if anyone knows kind of the state of play in Arizona. There's a lot of drug trafficking.
Hmm.
And because of that, because of the drugs, you have a lot of people, you know, having sex while on drugs. And that actually leads to a lot of children being born. And so the need for foster care for these children is just monumental in Arizona. It's much better than it was. But we had the money, we had the house. So we decided to foster, and that one foster turned into four adoptions.
It's amazing. Okay, so I got to ask, how do you even keep this all straight? Like there's nine birthdays, there's nine everything, there's nine of everything you have to do. You got to have some kind of little trick or something that you guys do.
Yeah, that little trick is actually what spawned a lot of my coaching. So outside of this, I coach executives. And I help them develop what I call a family operating system.
Okay.
And so just like, you know, a family is like a business. And when it's a small business, you can get away with, you know, keeping things in your head. You know, you don't have to have your processes written out. You can just manage it. Small enough, you can just manage it. But what we found with nine children is we have to have processes. We have to be very intentional. My wife is phenomenal. She's a very organized person. I'm an ideas guy. I'll be honest. I'm like ideas and vision. Yeah. And she's all about organization execution. So, we have a family operating system where we understand what our roles are and we talk and communicate a lot of planning and just some good old fashioned, patience work. Yeah.
I was always nervous having the third because then my wife and I were outnumbered when there's more of them than there are of us. And it's like, oh, this is going to be weird. But for you guys, for somebody listening, how do you craft quality time for your kids? What does that look like? Are you doing this in groups? Are you doing this individually? How do you schedule that? I'm really curious about how you bond with your kids one-on-one.
Yeah. So every week, my wife and I schedule a one-on-one date with one of our children.
Cool.
So each month, they each have a date with either myself, with myself and my wife. But normally, it's just with me and then with her. And so we have like this rotating schedule. So that's one way that we have to have one-on-one time. And during that time, we make sure to ask a lot of questions like, hey, what's going well? What's not going well? What can we do to help you feel loved? What's something as parents we can do better? What can we do more of? How's school going? How's your friend? You know, so just a lot of time to have that one-on-one attention. And then again, in the evenings, we are pretty disciplined with our evenings. 6 o'clock hits, the little kids go down for quiet time. And from 6 to 7, I'm usually spending time with the kids. And when we do bedtime routines where it's one-on-one, you know, physical interaction, talking with them. That's generally how we do it. Otherwise, it's just trying to be present. My wife and I try hard to keep our phones. We're not perfect at it. No, I'll just say this.
Yeah.
You know, I buffer on my phone too, so I'm not the perfect dad, but we try really hard, you know, between the hours of 4 and 7 to really limit how much time my wife and I are on our own phones so that we can be fully present. And it's something that I have to work really hard on because after 4 o'clock, you know, the workday is kind of over for me and I just want to relax, but you know, have to be there for the kids, have to be there for the wife. And the hours between like 7 and 8:30 is usually my time, the time for my wife and I to connect and wind down.
Good. Okay. So how about selfish time for yourself and for your wife, just to kind of unplug from being parents? Like, what do you do for yourself? How do you carve out time for yourself?
Yeah. So it's one of the reasons why I'm pretty strict on going to bed by 8:30. I'm up usually around 4.
Wow.
And that 4 to 5:30 is me time, whether that's exercise, reading a book, writing a book, journaling. That's my me time is before anyone else is up in the house. That's the time I have for myself.
So I would think with that many people under one roof, you could lose yourself. You could lose your identity, right? If you don't have time for yourself, you're going to get caught up in the mix. And I know with 3, I found it hard. So I can't imagine. Oh my gosh. It must be fun too at the same time.
Yeah. And what I've found, what my wife and I have found is that it scales well. If that makes sense, you get kind of economies of scale sort of thing going on where the kids play with each other or fight with each other. You know, it's all kind of one and the same at that point. So they don't necessarily need your one-on-one attention all the time.
Right.
There's things to do. And then if you're all doing group activities, and I include the kids in what I enjoy doing. So yeah. Growing up, I was involved with fencing. I also enjoyed kendo and just general sword play. And and so my sons and I, we'll have fun. We'll take, or even some of my daughters, we'll take out the we call them boffing swords, you know, the PVC wrapped up with foam. We'll bash on each other to get each other's energy out or build Legos together. So I think there's a way to find synergies between the hobbies you like. And I think also you don't get 9 children if you don't enjoy being a parent. And I think that's not like, I don't think it's a, you enjoy being a parent, you don't enjoy being a parent. I think it's a dial and a spectrum where some people enjoy it more than others or have more capacity for that than others. I know some people who probably shouldn't have more than 2 or 3 children, and that's okay. And yeah. I don't think everyone needs to have 9 children.
No.
And I don't think everyone needs to have children. Yeah.
No.
So
I'm curious about the bridge between fostering and adoption for you guys. Talk a little bit about that. Like, it's one thing to open your home, which is amazing, to bring kids into your home and into your family, and they feel loved and accepted and a part of your home. They don't feel like strangers, just temporarily staying in your home. You sounds like you're creating a really safe place for these kids to be loved and cared for. Talk about the transition from fostering to adoption. That's a big change for them and for you guys, right?
Well, it probably would be for some of these kids who are coming in a little older.
Okay.
With all of our foster children, and this is something they vet and filter for at the beginning when you start your foster care journey. But we let them know that we were interested in foster to adopt.
Okay.
And so they cases where they thought might end up in adoption, they gave to us.
Okay.
And additionally, we were fostering newborns. Now, it's still rare that every child that we have adopted. We've only fostered 4 children, and one of them did reunite with his family, but they later came back into the home. But we received all of our foster children. The oldest was 2 weeks old when we received them.
Wow.
And so because we were a foster to adopt family, they gave us a lot of the babies.
Okay.
And so when we started developing, you know, these relationships with these children, just understanding the cases, whenever there's drugs involved,
yeah,
those cases very rarely end up in reunification just because a drug addiction is so hard to get over. And especially when you're looking at the kind of the socioeconomic status of some of these families, they are the families with the fewest resources.
Yeah.
And by resources, I'm not talking about financially. I'm talking about social capital.
Yeah.
We're talking about what kind of social connections do they have? And a lot of these parents who have children who go into the foster care system, these parents were in the foster care system themselves.
Yeah.
And so what you see is kind of like this cycle of, they call it the cycle of abuse, cycle of neglect. And they're just parenting how they were parented. And they don't know, they don't have the tool sets that, you know, maybe you and I do.
Yeah.
And so when you're looking at these cases, it's fairly easy to get a pretty good handle or guess as to whether or not children will successfully reunify.
Yeah.
And with these bio parents, even though one, so the first child that we received into our care is still a foster child. So it's been 4 years. That's really long for a case.
Yeah.
But drugs were involved, and you know, they'd make some improvement, then do kind of backslide, make some improvement and backslide. And so you just have to keep your heart really open. That's something that we discuss a lot on The Emotional Man is, you know, how do we open ourselves up to feeling pain?
Mm-hmm.
And that's just something that you have to go in with eyes wide open.
Yeah.
Just like if you're a bodybuilder, you go into the gym knowing you're going to cause yourself some pain, right? And just some discomfort.
Yeah.
But you're okay with that. That's part of the process. And so we kind of viewed it along the similar lines.
What's the family dynamic like between your biological children and the children that you've adopted? Like, the one thing I heard somebody talk about around adoption was they reframed it for me in a different context I never heard anybody mention. They said it seemed like in adoption terms, people use the words like, you know, I was given up for adoption. But he said, this person I was talking to who's adopted, he said, I see it more like I'm chosen. My family or the court system, whatever, chose to put me into adoption. A family came and chose me. So I feel like I'm chosen. I'm not abandoned or not wanted. I feel like I'm actually chosen. And he's like a totally different perspective on being adopted. I'm like, wow, that is so different than what I've heard from other people. I'm just curious about what's the relationship like within the home between all the different stories represented in your home. How is everybody getting along? Does everybody have their spot? How do you distribute love in this environment? I'm really curious how behind the scenes that we don't get to see when you guys go for a walk as a big mob down the street. How does all this work behind the scenes?
Honestly, it's funny. Most of our adopted children look like they could be biological. A little exception for the two who are Hispanic. That neither my wife or I look. I'm like an Irish white boy. So, but to be honest, what we have found, because all of our adoptions are very open, is what we have found is we've expanded the concept of family. In that, all of our children feel like they have a lot of parents. It just like you might. As much as we've adopted these children, we've adopted their parents as well, and the parents have adopted us. So it almost feels like an in-law relationship.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Almost like you've married in to all these families. And so every Mother's and Father's Day, we are sending out, I think like around 8 to 10 Mother's Day and Father's Day cards.
Do you get a discount on those cards? You buy that many in bulk?
We just bulk buy them. and so from very early on, like my oldest child was 4 when we adopted the twins.
Mm-hmm.
So they've never known anything different. And they're always asking us when we're going to adopt or foster care next. It's just part of our family culture and identity at this point. So I think it just feels very normal to them. And considering that our biological children are outnumbered by our foster and adopted children, I don't know. It's just, we're all Nearies. And I think the big thing is we've really honed in our family identity by our values rather than by our DNA.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
And so being a Neary isn't about being the biological son and daughter of Melissa and Joseph Neary. Being a Neary means that you're kind, grateful, and can do hard things. Mm. And so that's part of our family operating system is understanding our family values. And we've built a lot of culture elements there to reinforce that. So before the kids go out to school each day, we have our family cheer where, you know, one of the kids and each kid kind of takes a turn each day. It looks like a sports team, you know, like going out to play.
All hands in.
So the kids will say, Nearies are, and then everyone else will respond, kind, Nearies are grateful, Nearies can do hard things. And we go in, we go in for like a huddle and go. And our mascot is the honey badger. So they'll go honey badgers. And they all rush out the door. It's great. A little corny, but corny is what builds culture. So
I love it. I would love to see the whole herd out in the wild, going for groceries or going to the movies or doing something in groups. Do you guys do that? Do you guys all go out together and do something as a family?
Yeah. I tell you firsthand, we plan very strategically.
I bet.
When we're low on children to go shopping, because shopping with 9 children between ages 11 and 1 is like my worst nightmare.
I want this. Yeah, times 9.
Oh, yeah. It's just 1 hour of straight. You just say no the whole time.
Is that 9 buggies to you then? Like 9 carts at the store?
No, I think the most we ever go shopping with is like maybe 2 or 3 kids. And We may all go to like Sam's Club or Costco together to, you know, take over their dining area. Yeah. That's like a gang coming in. And generally when we've done that, we've actually had like 2 carts. So we'll put the 4 youngest in those side-by-side carts and all the other kids are around the table. And my wife and I are kind of like, you know, standing up like bouncers, you know, making sure everyone, you know, isn't throwing food.
I jump ahead in my mind to 9 drivers with driver's licenses. I jump ahead to 9 university and college applications. I jump ahead to 9 boyfriends, girlfriends coming by the house. Oh my gosh. Like my mind's spinning right now just talking to you. I'm like, do you ever think down the road to what this is going to be like as the kids get older too?
You know, I think the farthest I think down the line is I ask myself, okay, how many more years till my youngest is out of diapers? I have been changing diapers for 11 years. That is 11 years of, I've probably changed at least once or 2 poopy diapers every day. Well, not every day because, you know, it's relatively every day. All right. Yeah. My wife and I have been changing diapers relatively 5 to 8 times a day, every day.
You need a
sponsor.
For
the past 11 years.
You need a sponsor.
I know. I need one of those TLC shows to come by.
If you're listening, all the information in the show notes, go reach out. Yeah. Wow.
But no, when I think ahead, I'm often thinking, okay, when will my youngest child be able to dress themselves? I'm like, okay, that's 5 years. 5 years in the road, you know, my oldest will be 16, 17. Holy cow, she'll be driving. That'd be so nice to have another driver. And, you know, my financial goals are such that I don't have any concerns about supporting that.
Good.
And so, but even that being said, I grew up in a family of 9 kids.
Yeah.
And not all of us drove. Like, I was the first one in my family to drive a car while still a teenager. But you know, that was back in the 90s and 80s. So not that big of a deal. And you know, my wife's family had a lot higher income than my family did growing up.
Yeah.
And the thing is, as a kid, like you notice it, but you don't notice it. It didn't change how happy I was. Like, you give me a stick and put me outside and I was happy. You know, yeah. I had a wonderful imagination. And so I don't worry too much about that. As long as my children, you know, I can show love and kindness to my children and help them grow. That's a matter way more than, you know, however many iPads they get growing up.
Yeah. Wow. It's amazing. So for a family looking to foster, any thoughts for somebody listening that they feel like that's their calling, that they really feel drawn to that, and they're not sure what that's going to feel like or how that's going to change their life? Any kind of words of wisdom for somebody as a couple thinking that, you know, fostering is going to be in our future?
Yeah, get ready to see the world in full color.
Mm.
And by that, I mean, so often we limit our experience because we want to avoid feeling pain or discomfort, which is natural. Biologically, we try to avoid pain, pursue pleasure, and conserve energy. And foster care is none of those things.
Mm.
But with the discomfort, with the pain, your ability and capacity to feel joy and compassion and patience expands as well. And so you're able to see, it's almost like someone who survived cancer. They just appreciate life so much more.
Yeah.
I think that's what it's like to a degree, not necessarily to the degree of, you know, being a cancer survivor, but you learn to see people in a different light. You learn to be a lot more understanding, a lot more compassionate, both with other people and with yourself, because you realize that people aren't doing this because they're evil. People don't place their children up for adoption because they're evil.
No.
Often it's, yeah, I know, if you've ever gotten a month going a month without trying to eat sugar or, you know, bread or what you think of your favorite food and try going a month or 2 months without it.
Yeah.
And that's not nearly as difficult it is to try to go without, you know, drugs after you've experienced it.
Yeah.
And so you just develop a lot of compassion for these parents who've come from broken, neglected, and abusive homes. And they are just trying their darndest to figure life out. They need some help. Yeah. And you're giving them that space. And most of these people haven't. So my wife and I always try to, when we approach this, we always ask ourselves, well, what does love feel like? Sometimes love is boundaries, because children need boundaries. People need boundaries that help, you know, boundaries help us recognize what's safe and what's not safe. And sometimes love is just meeting people where they're at and congratulating them on their small steps forward in life.
Yeah.
Even though we may think that small step they should have taken, you know, years ago, but you meet people where they're at. And so I guess my advice for people who are considering foster care is recognize, yeah, it's going to hurt when children reunify, because we've had children reunify, but they've come back. But it hurts, but it also is incredibly satisfying. It's incredibly life-changing. And so if you want an adventure of a lifetime and the ability to really, really have a positive, lasting impact on these children who I think have been given some of life's hardest handouts, then go for it.
Yeah. I had a dad on the podcast, him and his wife also foster. A little different. He would have some kids would come through the home for a day or two, kind of a transitional thing. And one of the kids that came into the home, I think turned 12. It was his birthday, the day that he came into the home. And so the dad just didn't really think much of it, just went to the store, bought a few presents. And even though this boy was only in the home for a couple days, they had a birthday party for him and he got presents. And later on, the same dad is in a store by himself. And this young man walked up to him and said, "You don't know who I am." And the dad's like, no, because he's totally different at this stage, taller and older. He said, I was that kid that you bought presents for on my 12th birthday, and you changed my life. You saved my life, and I've never forgotten you, and I just always wanted to say thanks, and here you are, so thank you. And it's like the dad walked out of that store going, wow, you know, even in a two-day encounter with this kid coming through his home for just that short period of time, changed that kid's life. And I'm like, so when I hear that and I hear people saying they want to be foster parents, I'm like, click in for like the adventure of your lifetime, because you don't know, especially if you only have a day or two with these kids, you know, you don't know the impact you're going to have on them and how that will restructure their future, right?
So. It's so true. Yeah. And you'll make as big of an impact on their lives as they will make on yours.
Yeah.
If you're open to it, if you open yourself up to it.
Yeah. It's amazing. So, okay, I got to ask this too, like for you and your wife, you got to have some kind of support outside of the four walls of this house just to stay in love with each other, human at the end of the day with all those diapers piling up and everything. Who supports the two of you? Who is in your corner that fills your cup?
Yeah, so I think it's really important to have your tribe. Obviously, we both come from large families. And so my wife has some phenomenal support from her parents, her siblings. So she gets a lot of that emotional support there. I have eight siblings. I think her emotional capacity for connection is a lot more than mine. Like if I have Melissa to like entertain me, like spend time with, I'm good. Like that, yeah. I just need like my one person and like maybe another guy to hang out with every blue moon. I don't need a whole lot. I get a lot of social connection just from work and doing what I do. But it's really nice when your sister-in-law will come and watch the kids while you go get an hour or two and be able to be husband and wife for a while.
Yeah.
Also, you know, we're both LDS.
Yeah.
And that being able to key into your community for support, you know who the babysitters are, you know who they are, and you know that comes with a degree of trust. And and so we're comfortable, you know, having the 13, 14 year olds down the street come and watch the kids for a couple hours. And then that's mostly what we do. But we're also, again, we're pretty strict with bedtime, because that like 7 o'clock hits and that's like mom and dad time. Like that is sacrosanct.
Yeah.
If the kids come knocking, we will send them right away. Like, nope, it's mom and dad time. You get us tomorrow. You know? So, we have a strict no children in the bed rule. And so we will comfort you. We will cuddle you, but you will always end up back in your own bed.
Yeah. Wow.
And so I think we, on top of that, I think it's really important to always be dating. My wife and I try to do things to engage our interests, to be kind of make ourselves new again to each other, and always kind of be exploring how we're changing, what's developing. So I don't feel like we've ever stopped dating. I think relationships fail when people stop dating each other.
Yeah.
And so I also think marriages become stale when you stop changing, when you stop developing, growing. So we both have invested a lot in self-development. We've both had life coaches in the past.
Good.
We're both certified life coaches. And so we're in the self-development game a lot, trying. Yeah. So, because, you know, and as you change, it kind of, I don't know, makes the relationship more fresh. But if you're kind of just stagnating and kind of the same old bone that you've chewed on over the past year, then that's not exciting anymore. So I think that's kind of one of the ways. So between extended family, the community, having friends, and then just self-development, I think that's crucial for parents not to lose themselves in being a mom or dad, and they lose sight of being a husband and wife, or just being their own individual person.
One of the sweetest things I've ever heard, or I love to hear, apart from my kids telling me that they love me, is to walk into a restaurant and hear "table for two." That is the best feeling ever. You're like, yes, we'll take the table for two.
Just two of us.
And all those other people waiting for the big tables are frowning at you. You go right past them and right to your table. I love table for two.
You know, so while my wife and I have traveled and flown with a lot of our kids, and I remember the first time I went, it was for work. For my new job, I was the chief operating officer for an auditing firm, and I was flying out for an audit, and I was all by myself in the airport. And it felt like vacation. Like I just walked through security. There was no strollers. There's no like wrangling kids to stay in line. There's no like trying to keep the baby happy, throwing them up and down, and you know, everyone giving you looks. So I get it. Like,
wow. Okay. So this is amazing. Okay. So again, the podcast, the Emotional Man Weekly podcast, tell us more about the coaching side too. I'd love to send people to you guys and connect with you around that. Let's talk about that a little bit more too.
Yeah. So this all came out as a chief operating officer and as an officer in the Air Force. I saw a lot of relationships fail and struggle because people couldn't find a healthy balance between the competing priorities of providing for your family financially and providing for your family emotionally. Mm. And then also just your own personal, you know, spiritual, physical, mental health. And so that got, and also my parents growing up, they separated, 13 times, divorced each other twice.
Wow.
Remarried, divorced. And now my father's happily married. My mom is happily single. I didn't want that for my family. Mm. And so that kind of led to this search, and I kind of came away with that with some pretty poor coping mechanisms. My wife and I eventually got life coaches that helped us learn how to recognize how our thoughts influenced our emotions motivated our actions were creating the results in our lives. And so I took those kind of principles, and in the business environment with the connection I had with just other executives, I saw there's just a real need to learning how to understand why we feel so driven to work so hard. There's a lot of lies or misconceptions we tell ourselves of why we're working so hard.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times executives, they're not an executive because they're lazy. They're executive because they're passionate, they know how to work hard, and they do work hard. But then they don't know how to balance the need to provide, you know, for their company with providing for their health or providing for their relationships.
Yeah.
And so that's what kind of started this whole process, is a me trying to figure it out, right? the obstacle becomes the way.
Yeah.
And with how many kids I had, with being gone a lot as a nuclear launch officer, I was away from, you know, I was working 70 plus hours a week, gone away from my family anywhere from 32 to 72 hours at a time. So how did you balance that with emails coming in with my wife just sobbing because she's been up all night, puked on, thrown up on, blowout diapers, and she's not sleeping well. And how do we cope with that as a family, or, you know, as a chief executive for a company? And so that's where a lot of that came from. So the Emotional Man Weekly podcast is really about how do we face the challenges that come from building a business and raising a family. Yeah. That's what that's all about. And it's a lot of great stories from other successful and business people sharing, you know, their scars and what they've learned from the process.
Yeah, I love it. So from one podcaster to another, as we kind of wrap up here, because I know you got 9 people that need your attention today and your wife. Don't forget your wife. As a podcaster to a podcaster, I would love for you to kind of close off the episode and talk to a dad today that's listening, that's here, and maybe they're struggling, maybe they're here for some wisdom and some inside knowledge from another dad. I always try to picture this dad and where they are and what they're doing. Sometimes I picture him in the hospital as he's about to walk down the hall for the first time, walk through those doors in his scrubs and somebody's going to turn to him and say, are you okay, Dad? Or congratulations, Dad. And it's the first time he's ever heard that word before, right? So I think of that dad. I think of the dad who's got 9 kids and the house is crazy busy. And I'm trying to think of how I can reach out to that person and encourage them today. But again, as a podcaster, and you do this on your show so well, I'd love for you to talk to the dad that's listening. And I'm just going to sit back and listen too. But what's your encouragement for a dad listening today?
Yeah, one of the journeys I've been on for the past several years is learning how to cope with when things are really hard, when you're tired emotionally, physically, spiritually. A lot of times when I reach that point where I'm just bored out of my mind with kind of the mundane drivel of whatever my child is really into or whatever it may be, my tendency is to want to retreat into myself, to retreat to pleasure, to fill my life with pleasure, to balance out the, you know, however uncomfortable I'm feeling. And what I've learned is, as a father, is the more that we can be present and embrace the discomfort, the pain, the actually less it is in our lives, and the more we experience pleasure. And so for the new dad, embrace the challenge. You're into a lot of long nights, and just embrace it. Be present with it, and know that you're strong enough to feel uncomfortable. And I think that's, rather than trying to run away from the pain in our lives, being a man, being a father, is realizing we have the strength to embrace it. And that's what I would offer, is to embrace the discomfort, embrace the pain as a father. And that, I think, was in the strongest measures of manliness. Because most often, the reason why we are fatherless is because so many men these days are afraid to shoulder up their burden of discomfort, of pain, of fear. So my invitation to you, to me, is to learn how to embrace it and be a man, stand up and bear the discomfort. And then the funny thing that happens is pleasure becomes more pleasurable and pain becomes less painful.
Wow.
So that'd be my 2 cents of what I've learned over the past several years.
Well, that's worth more than 2 cents. That's really good. That's really good. Thank you so much for doing this, being on Dad Space. Again, everyone's a great podcast. Go listen to the Emotional Man Weekly podcast. It's available everywhere, obviously, and it's really good. Like, there's the guests are amazing and the conversation's great, and you're going to walk away with some real inspiration in your dad journey. So I'm so happy to point all these dads who listen to my show to yet another amazing resource for dads. And I'm so happy that you're in the same space, building a spot for men to have those conversations. And so thank you for doing that and for hosting your podcast. I think it's great.
Thank you so much, David. You are doing wonderful work. And for all those who think about starting a podcast, David has some great resources as well. If you ever felt like you have a voice, we all could use more voices, especially more dad voices out there. So I encourage you to reach out to David. He has some wonderful resources on the people who are thinking about starting a podcast, and we need more of them out there. I don't think there can ever be too many voices out there sharing their experiences.
Yeah, amazing. Thank you for that. That's so kind of you. So yes, everyone, Joseph's on the podcast. Everyone go check out all the information in the show notes. As always, click the links, go, and when you go to his podcast, you know, you do the thing. You like, you follow, you share, do all that great stuff, and tell 10 people about his podcast. And let's grow his audience at the same time. So again, thank you so much for doing this.
So welcome.
Hey, thanks for listening to Dad Space today. I'm so thankful that you were here for this episode. If you like the show, please let another dad know. Hey, that kind of rhymed. Anyways, share the episode out with somebody in your circle who would love Dad Space. That means so much to us here, for our guests who donate their time to be on the show. And we just want to see this grow. So again, another rhyme. Oh, wow. Anyhow, I think I need to write a song or something. Thank you for being here with Dad Space. And again, looking forward to the next episode.
look forward to having you here again with us. And if we can help you in any way, if you have a great guest idea for the show, a topic that you would love us to cover, we would love to do that here on Dad Space. So thanks for listening, and thanks for being part of the community. And to you, Dad, thank you for listening, and thank you for sharing Dad Space. Catch you on the next one. Take care.